Hi, I'm Brian.
And I'm Michaela. And this is Drink the Movies,
a podcast where each week we try to recreate a classic movie drink and discuss the movie that inspired it.
Thanks for joining us. Now let's drink the movies.
Well, hello and welcome to episode 105 of Drink the Movies. I'm Brian here, as always, with Michaela. And Michaela, we have made it to another holiday season. December is upon us, the snow is falling, the trees are trimmed, and the eggnog is flowing. But how are you doing? You were traveling last week. What'd you get up to?
I went to Puerto Vallarta in Mexico. I'd never been there before. I drank a lot of tequila, had some really interesting tequila tastings. It's really interesting. I learned a lot about the different types of, like, the agave, reposado, all of the tequila things. Most of it, it made sense at the time, but then I slept and I've forgotten a lot of it, but that's okay. I feel like
a tequila tasting in Mexico is not the ideal place to learn about tequila. I feel like the tasting bit might overtake the learning bit.
Yeah. So one of the things that I did want to talk a little bit about is, if you'll remember, a couple episodes back, it was still Halloween, and we made a homemade, very beautiful luster dust liqueur with blackberries, and we infused that and all of that, and we used vodka as the base. Well, you can use tequila to make liqueur as well. And so one thing that we discovered, or I dove like real deep into, was all of these tequila based liqueurs. And so there's one that I wasn't able to actually find and get a bottle of and bring over back to the States, but I'm on the lookout for it. And it was fig liqueur with tequila, which sounds kind of strange, but if you like fig at all, even if you don't think you're a fig person, this stuff is amazing. And they were out of it. And so hopefully they'll be able to ship me some, and we can have some early Christmas drink with it that we're going to have to make up. But
that sounds really good. What I'm interested in now, knowing about this luster dust trick, is write this down. Get a piece of paper and write this down, Michaela. Next year, we're going to do a green luster dust tequila and make that into like an ectoplasm margarita. It's going to be exactly like an ecto cooler from your high C days. It's going to be delicious and beautiful. But we're getting way ahead of ourselves by like 10 months right now. What we need to do is we need to take a step back and get into holiday movie month, because Drink the Movie started with a Christmas movie, National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation. And then the next year, you know, we did some more holiday films. We did How the Grinch Stole Christmas, and those are both Christmas classics, Michaela. And today we're talking about a classic of the action genre. Some people would say that it is a Christmas movie, like you. Some people would say that it is not a Christmas movie, like me. But we're going to have to get into all that after I drink. So we will be right back, mix up this week's cocktail, and get ready to talk about Die Hard.
So this week, we have been invited to make drinks for the Christmas party at Nakatomi Plaza. And so we're going to serve up a Nakatomi Tower Bomb, a recipe that we found on Secret of the Booze. Secrets of the Booze is, for anybody who doesn't know, we have looked to them to guide us many times here on Drink the Movies to find cool drinks. They are on YouTube. They're amazing. And I think they were genuinely like super excited, or maybe they just had a few of these Nakatomi Tower Bombs at the point.
They had been enjoying the Christmas party for sure by the time they got around to making this one. But yeah, Michaela, you sent this recipe my way. We needed to do something, and this one's very theatrical. It's very over the top, which is, you know, exactly how John McClane would want to do a Christmas drink for sure. But I don't know, when you sent this to me, I was watching them make that. I'm like, there's no way that this is going to be good. It's not even possible. These ingredients, they don't go together. I don't even, what are you even doing? What are you even doing with these ingredients? But let's get this party started. So we're going to take a glass, like a pint glass. You're going to rim that with sugar, and then you're going to throw some other ingredients in it, Michaela.
That's right. You're going to start with roughly 2 ounces of sake, roughly 2 ounces of cranberry juice, and roughly 2 ounces of sparkling wine. Okay. So we say roughly because the actual recipe, they just said, hey, you're going to put some of this in the glass. And we had to like gauge it in the pint glass. So use at your discretion. Okay. But you're going to fill that pint glass with that stuff. Okay. And then you're going to take an ounce of peach schnapps. Which again, this does not sound delicious at all. And you're just going to, you're going to take an ounce, put that in a shot glass, and then you're going to create a bomb. Now the bomb part of a drink, there's a bunch of bombs out there. There's a Jaeger bomb. It's probably the, one of the most, popular, bombs out there. The reason why they call it that is because you literally drop the shot into the bigger glass, and then you can sip it or chug it. It's up to you. If it's something like the one that they make with Bailey's and Guinness, you have to drink it really fast or else it'll curdle. This is not one of those. You can sip this one if you want. Yep. We did because it's a lot of liquid.
It would be hard to chug with that sparkling wine in there, which is a rose, which is a rosé wine. We used sparkling Cava for that. Don't use anything that costs more than $15, please. That is, that's our one Christmas wish, is that you go with something less expensive. But yeah, you put that in there, you drop in that peach schnapps, and then you drink it. And I have to say, Michaela, it is quite the pleasant surprise because I was expecting this to be terrible. But you know what it was? It was pretty good.
It is pretty good. So it all kind of works. So obviously we have sake because Nakatomi, Mr. Nakatomi is Japanese. So we wanted to pay homage to the whole tower. And of course we did peach schnapps because schnapps is, I guess, German, and Hans Gruber, who is the nemesis of all of the things. He's supposed to be from Germany, I think. Or is it Austrian? Yep. I don't know.
He's German. Yeah.
Is he German? That's what I, okay.
You got the sparkling wine, which is coming from a Christmas party, I guess.
That's right.
You might be having that. They're having some other extracurriculars at the actual Christmas party at Nakatomi Plaza. That's for sure. But yeah, you put this in there, and if you don't want to do this as like a bomb kind of a drink, you could just put the peach schnapps in there and drink it. This would probably be good over ice too, if you just wanted to make, you know, kind of a regular old long drink out of it. But yeah, there's something like, I was expecting it to be really terrible, but some reason like the sparkling wine and the cranberry and the sake get together, and it's light and effervescent, like, because the sake is so light, it doesn't get in the way, and the cranberry and the sparkling wine really play well together. It kind of hits on those riper fruit notes, and then the peach schnapps just gives it a little bit of kind of umptuousness. It's not overly peachy. I don't know. I really enjoyed this. I don't know when I would ever have these four ingredients just laying around, but if you happen to, go ahead and mix one of these up.
Well, until Die Hard became the Die Hard film, I bet people felt that way, where it was like, I don't know how I'm going to be able to come together and bring Christmas and bombs and terrorists and vaults and locks and guns and overzealous FBI agents. I don't know how all of that is going to work, but somehow it does. It creates an amazing Christmas action classic that we're going to talk about.
It creates a movie, that's for sure. And this creates a drink, and it is really good. So definitely, if you feel so inclined or have these ingredients laying around, and you might, go ahead and mix one of these up. Let us know what you think about it, and check out the website for pictures of ours and the written instructions. But for now, Michaela, we need to go. We need to fly from New York to California to go to a Christmas party to reunite with our ex. And there's going to be some trouble along the way. We're going to have to deal with that, but we're going to need to take a break first. So let's take a quick break, and we'll be right back to chat about this week's film, Die Hard.
Spoiler warning for Die Hard. If you've not yet seen this incredibly heartwarming classic Christmas film, you're in for a treat, because we're going to talk about all the things. It's very heartwarming. Shush. Especially the end. It's beautiful. It's beautiful. But we're going to talk about all the things. So if you have not seen it and you don't want us to tell you how it all ends, and it's very explosive, you should press pause. You should go make yourself a Nakatomi Tower bomb. You should go watch the film. You've had almost 35 years to do it. And then you can come back and listen to the podcast, and we can all chat about it.
Yeah, and I feel like you might probably just be able to guess how it ends, since there were like 100 of these things. But this came out in 1988. It was directed by John McTiernan, who had done Predator the year before, and then he came back to do another Die Hard film, Die Hard with a Vengeance, in 1995. And this stars, as everyone knows, Bruce Willis as John McClane. Alan Rickman is our German terrorist, Hans Gruber. And Reginald Vell Johnson is Sergeant Al Powell, the best sergeant around. For sure. He's our man on the outside, and we're going to be talking about all that. But Michaela, Christmas movie or not, it was critically acclaimed, got 4 Academy Award nods.
Yeah.
Sound, editing, sound effects editing, and visual effects. Pretty good.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we really have discriminating tastes here at Drink the Movies. We know good films and we know good movies. This is both the Academy Awards agreed. So there we go. Now, what they didn't agree on was whether or not it was actually considered a Christmas film.
That's right. Yeah, I don't know if it is. It does take place at a Christmas party, so that is one feather in the cap for Christmas movie. But we're going to be talking about that after we kind of run through this thing a little bit. So we're going to pick up our story. We are with John McClane. He is in an airplane talking to a gentleman, tells him, take off your shoes when you land, which is a weird thing to tell your seatmate in an airplane, I guess. But I'm not a big talker myself. But he is on his way to California to reunite with his wife, mend some fences, and you know, get on getting on in California.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because John McClane was a cop. He's still a cop back in New York. His wife, I guess, got this big job, and it was going to take her across the world or across the United States. It's a long flight. I think that's why they start having the conversation about the taking off the shoes, because it's something like 6 hours or 7 hours long from New York to LA. And
They didn't have AirPods yet. So
they didn't. They didn't. So what were you going to do? You were going to talk to people. And they're smoking as well on this flight. I was like, what happened?
Yeah.
Wow. That's a bad thing. That's a safety problem. But
you know what else is a bad thing? Is he gets up at the end of his flight and he reaches up and he pulls the world's most giant teddy bear out of the overhead bin. If I saw someone getting on to my flight with that, I'd be like, don't, you're taking up all the overhead bin space. Yeah. John McClane.
What are you
knock
doing?
It off, guy. Knock it off.
Yeah. But this was back when, you know, there were only two people sitting in a row instead of 30,000.
You could check your bag for free.
Right. Yeah. This was back when in the dream times, in the before times, when airlines didn't suck. So, but they did have smoking on the plane, so maybe not. I don't know. So anyway, John gets out of the airport, but he sees a guy, very well-dressed gentleman, in a nice suit with his name, and he has a ride in a limo ready to go. He meets Argon.
Argon. His name is Argyle. He's played by Tucker
Argyle.
White.
Sorry.
He's awesome. So yeah, he's going to take him. He's picking him up in this limo that the Nakatoma Corporation or whatever the business name is has sent a limo to pick up John McClane. Pretty classy move, I will say. So he gets in. They're there. John McClane says, "Hey, can we listen to some Christmas tunes?" And Argyle says, "No. Those are lame. We're going to listen to these bangers." Feather in the cap for not a Christmas movie. Argyle doesn't even want to be bothered with Christmas. And why should he? I don't know. But they make their way to Nakatomi Tower. We are going to meet some people. We're going to meet the wife. Not the ex-wife, still the wife. But for some reason is using her maiden name. Rubs John McClane the wrong way a little bit. And what does Holly have to say for herself, Michaela?
Holly has to say nothing to him. She doesn't owe him anything. But apparently, true. You know,
she owes him a little bit because she's talking to this super lame-o by the name of Ellis. But okay. That's okay.
She's not talking to Ellis. Ellis is talking to her. Let's be real clear about this. Even when he's like, I'm thinking like mulled wine. I'm thinking like brie. I'm thinking like a fire. And she just looks at him like, you are on the wrong planet for this.
He's been imbibing in too many lines of things off of desks. I think, is what his real problem is.
That's true. So they're having here. Here's where I think there's a slight problem with the plot, and we can talk about this because I know you are not on board with this being a Christmas film. But I guess it's Christmas Eve, and it's like 5:40 at night. They're having a Christmas party, and I guess it's a double party because they've closed this big deal and everybody just is super excited, but people are kind of closing things down. They've got champagne out. Ellis, as you are talking about, which I love him. He's played by Hart Bochner. He's super sleazy and so gross, but he does it so well. He's like trying to make eyes at Holly Gennaro, and Bruce Willis kind of shows up. Argyle says, hey, if this isn't going to work with you and your ex, like, do you have a place to stay? And he's like, look, she just asked me to get on the flight. It's Christmas. I want to see my kids. I don't know how this is going to work. So Argyle, being super cool, was like, I'll just wait downstairs in the car. So he's like, you know, checking out on there's a CD player in this limo, and he's so excited about it. And so he's hanging out, waiting for Bruce.
That's right. Yeah, he's hanging out, listening to CDs, talking on the phone in the limo, which probably costs like $1,000 a minute. And he's on the phone the entire movie, which I think is pretty awesome. But yeah, John McClane gets to this party. We mentioned that it got nominated for the sound design. But one of the things that I noticed that I thought was awesome is John McClane gets on the elevator because you're going up to the 30th floor where this Christmas party is going on. And he's in the elevator and it's all quiet. It's just kind of that ambient like elevator noise. And as he's getting there, you can hear the sound of the party like starting to like creep in as like, you know, the walls get thinner as you're coming up to the door, and then, you know, the doors open and it's just like washing over you. I thought that that sounded amazing and so cool. So you know, a lot of action movies you know, will get some nods for like sound effects because there's a lot going on, but I thought that that one was really, really cool. So yeah, he gets to the party, he meets the president of Nakatomi Industries, he meets the wife, they're chatting there, but I guess he's, you know, gonna get cleaned up a little bit. It's a long flight from New York, it's Christmas Eve. Who has a Christmas party on Christmas Eve? For your work people, that's mandatory fun going wrong right there. But the party looks pretty fun. It's like every stereotypical party. There is booze flowing, there are drugs happening, people are hooking up in offices. This is what a time to be alive at this Christmas party, for sure, for sure. But John McClane takes the advice from his seatmate, you know, don't be jet lagged, take your shoes off, make little fists with your toes. That's going to cure you of what ails you. And that's what he does. And he's like, wow, that guy was onto something.
However,
on something.
But now John McClane doesn't have any shoes on, and that is bad. That is bad. Because this is when, there's a terrorist attack. And I gotta say, again, we're unsurprised, I guess, that this one person with a gun can walk in to the very center of Nakatomi Plaza and like blow away the security guard, like immediately. And this other gentleman who, Clarence Gilliard, he's Theo, he is like, not blown by, this doesn't faze him at all. He's like, oh, you just shot this dude, that's cool. They all kind of show up, this group of very angry German folks like descend on the first floor of Nakatomi Plaza. They get up to the 30th floor where the party's happening. They start shooting everybody and everywhere. There's a bunch of craziness happening. Bruce Willis, he's in the bathroom. He is separated from all of this craziness, and he doesn't have any shoes on when this happens, and that's problem number one.
That is problem number one. Yeah, the problem number one is that these terrorists come, they get in, they shut down basically all the elevators and all the access and everything up to the 30th floor. So basically everyone is kind of stuck at the top of this building, which makes for a really interesting kind of scene and kind of environment for this thing to play out. And of course, we're not surprised when the baddies get there, because kind of in the lead up to this, like three or four times it cuts to this, I don't know, like delivery truck kind of thing. And every time it does, like it plays this super dark, tense music, and you're like, oh, that's the bad guys right there. They're rolling in. We're gonna see them any minute now. But yeah, they get there. John McClane is shoeless, but he is not rounded up with the rest of the hostages. He is an NYPD officer with a plan, and by that plan, it's to not get shot in the head by Hans Gruber and his minions there. So, kind of this next rest of the film basically is him trying to keep one up on Hans Gruber, right? He's hiding in the shadows, you know, he's doing his best to take out these terrorists kind of one by one. And that's kind of one of the neat things, right? John McClane is kind of an everyman, and he's really pitted against kind of this environment that he's in, which is kind of similar in a way to what we saw in Predator. You know, we mentioned that John McTiernan did that. You know, you're fighting against this enemy, but you're also fighting against the location that you're at, and that is what John McClane is having to do. And you know, it's pretty fun in terms of an action film, because you got a lot of one-liners. Bruce Willis is a funny guy. The environment's cool. It looks cool. And there's a lot of really kind of cool and interesting ways that he's dispatching of these different terrorists, because the terrorists are there to break in and steal all the money, Michaela. That's what they're there for.
Yeah, they're actually not terrorists at all. Turns out they just want $640 million in untraceable bearer bonds. I don't know how much money that was 20, 35 years ago, but that's a lot of money now. So I,
God, it was enough to pay Argyle's phone bill. At least.
It was enough to pay. So Hans Gruber's there. He takes Mr. Nakatomi into a room, says, hey, I need these codes to open the vault. And Mr. Nakatomi says, no.
It's Mr. Takagi, but...
Takagi, sorry, sorry. Well, it's his building, right? now, one of the things that I find really special about this action film, because it's so smartly done. So James Shigeta is Mr. Takagi, and he's so good in this opening scene when John meets him. And we are told that, hey, number one, the building is not finished. There's a couple of floors that are still under construction. That becomes really important later. Number two, talks about how amazing his wife, who is going by her maiden name, how amazing she is and how her career is just taken off. She's like the number two at this entire company. I don't know how that happens in 6 months, but you know, he's really trying to ingratiate himself to John McClane. Really cool guy. And when he's confronted with Hans Gruber and his group of non-terrorist thieves, he says, look, you're just going to have to kill me. I'm not going to give you the code. I don't know why he makes that decision, because I would have given him the code. And so what does Hans do? Just says, okay, and shoots him. Now, this is this is an adult film. This is not a film for kids, and y'all can judge me later. But what I will say is the special effects are really good, because this is a pretty gory film, but it's not gory because you see tons of like, I don't know. There's violent. I don't know how to really explain it. There's violence, but like obviously when Mr. Takagi gets shot, you don't see his face like explode or anything. You see the aftermath of what happens behind him when it happens. And it's very gory and it's very gross, but it's not egregious. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
It's like, it's not so over the top that it makes you shake your head, versus today. I think there's so many things where it almost becomes a distraction from what's actually happening in the movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's definitely more rooted kind of in a realistic tone as they're kind of playing this out. And yeah, like you said, you know, some of these floors are unfinished, and you know, we're seeing a lot of John McClane kind of running around these, hiding from the bad guys, you know, trying to trap them, get in behind them, do kind of all of these things, because he knows that he needs to start taking these guys out. He needs to stay hidden, because that's really the only way that they're going to get out. He tries to call smartly to the police, but the phone lines have been cut, of course, so he ends up getting a radio from one of these guys, and he goes to the emergency channel and calls on this like open air frequency. It goes to like the 911 operator, and they're like, you can't call us on this radio, guy. Call us on the phone. He's like, you are an idiot.
911 operator on the planet. She's I'm sorry, sir, you can't be on this line. And he's like, I know. And she's like, we're gonna have to report you. And he's like, I don't care. And then there's gunshots, and she's like, oh, that's really loud, let me call the police. So she calls one police officer. One.
Yeah, that's right. I love his line. He's like, I know, come down and arrest me, you know, show up here, someone. But yeah, so they end up calling one police officer. It is Reginald Vell Johnson playing Sergeant Al Powell. He is there picking up some Twinkies for his pregnant wife, which is a very sweet thing to do. Gotta love that. And he goes outside and he looks over at Nakatomi Tower. This shot is amazing because Nakatomi Tower is a real place. It's like the Fox Studio building or something like that. I don't know. It's this real place. So they're like having these lights flash up top, and you know, if you're just get a call to go look at that, you wouldn't think anything of it. But we know that it's the machine guns that are being shot, this crazy stuff going on, and it looks amazing. I love it. I love the way that it looks so much. But you know, Sergeant Al, he drives by, he's like, there's nothing going on here, because everyone's up 30 floors up, can't see anything. He goes into the lobby, he's talking to the gentleman sitting there at the security desk, who is a plant, you know, Hans Gruber's guys there, and you know, he tells him, go ahead and walk around. And you know, Al does a little bit of investigating. He's like, yeah, nothing to see here. I'm gonna go back out to my car, I'm gonna radio in and say that there's nothing. How do you get attention, someone that's 30 floors below you? You throw a dead guy on top of their car. That's going to do it. 10 times out of 10.
And it worked. I mean, I will say it totally worked. This police officer, he's amazing. He was on his way home to his pregnant wife. And he was like, it's going to be fine. I mean, halfway through this, you think that something horrible is going to happen to him because, of course, the person behind the desk is one of the terrorists because the dude that was behind the desk is now dead. And he's like, yeah, hold on. You can have a look around, but it's going to take a minute. And he's like, man, screw this. I'm going home. I'm going to go home to my wife. It's Christmas Eve. Luckily, the body makes him change his mind now. But then you're terrified because all of these shooters are up at the top of the building. They're shooting down on the cop. He like backs in reverse and he ends up like backing his car out over some shrubs down like a runway. He crashes it backwards and he gets out and he's like, oh my gosh, I need help and I need help right now. So he calls for backup. Finally, more people show up and start to give this the attention that it should have. Yeah, but John McClane's done a good job of cutting down the terrorist numbers, right?
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Sends one down the elevator shaft with like a Christmas hat on, takes away all his guns, so now he has a machine gun. He's very excited. Hans Gruber's getting more and more annoyed because it's going to take some time for the tech guy, Theo, to get all of the codes that are needed because there's like five or six of these special codes that are required in order to open the vault. So that's going to take like 2.5 hours. So right now they were really hoping they could just sit and wait and they'd be in and out before any of the police showed up. Well, the police have now been definitely called and his people are being pinged off by John McClane one by one.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, Hans Gruber was running on a timeline. He was expecting the cops to come, which I think is really interesting because that was part of his plan. But unfortunately, John McClane has gotten them there early. So it has really kind of advanced the timeline here. So one of the more neat and interesting aspects of this is you have John McClane. He's running around this building completely by himself, but he's picked up a radio from one of the terrorists that he's dispatched. So he's able to talk to Hans Gruber and he's able to talk to Sergeant Al on the outside. So you get some really kind of neat interactions, you know, kind of between the three of them, because otherwise it's just Bruce Willis just cracking wise with himself for the whole movie. So it's kind of this back and forth where he's talking, you know, more seriously with Al, which is nice. And they're learning a little bit more about each other. There's a really cool scene where, you know, John McClane is trying to take care of his very wounded feet, which looks very painful and terrible. If you have ever cut your foot, not good. And he cut his foot about as bad as one could hope to cut it. And they're having this conversation about, you know, Sergeant Al was, you know, he's working a desk now. He's on the street, accidentally shot a kid, which is terrible. You know, and basically he's writing out his days, you know, now at the police department. And John's talking to him about being a father. It's all this really cool stuff. And then on the flip side of that, you have him talking with Hans, you know, trying to kind of work one another out. John seems like a smart cop, really kind of has Hans figured out. Hans is learning more and more about John as they go. And he learns a lot about John from that stupid Ellis character who just turns up. He thinks he's going to be like an ally to Hans Gruber. What are you thinking, guy? Knock it off.
Yeah. He's like, I think I can deal with this Euro trash. Okay. I do $1 billion deals for breakfast. And he's wrong. And he should have really known when Hans Gruber had like didn't even blink when Mr. Takagi was like, just shoot me. I'm not going to give you a code. You'll just have to figure it out. He was like, all right, cool. So Ellis says, you know, hey, I know the guy. I invited him to the party. Doesn't tell him that his wife's there. And that's really important because Bruce immediately is freaking out because, of course, Hans like, we have one of your friends and they're on the phone. Yep. And Ellis is like, hey, I said you were my friend. I mean, and you need to really stop doing this. You need to quit. Let the police handle it. Let the FBI handle it. They'll do the negotiations. And he's really arrogant until Hans Gruber pulls out a gun and he's like, he's really going to shoot me. And John's like, I told you, you can't tell them that you know me because they're going to think that I will break and bend and I don't know you. So I can't, I'm going to have to let you die. And it's real. He's drinking a Coke and he realizes his eyes get real wide. I mean, Hart Bochner, he's been in a couple films that I just love.
It's real Christmassy. It's real Christmassy is what it is. And kind of us as the audience, we're right there with John. You assume when Ellis is talking to him that he's going to spill the beans to Hans that John's wife's down there and Hans is just going to go grab her. And then John's going to be like, okay, I surrender immediately, right?
Right.
But that's not what happens. I guess, you know, Ellis decides to keep that card in his front pocket, and he holds on to it a little bit too long. But yeah, there's some fun stuff, like the lower third of the building explodes because John McClane throws a bomb down the elevator shaft, which looks really cool. He's picking these guys off one by one until kind of then we're left at a head. So Sergeant Al's been kind of holding the local police off at bay as good as he can, right? You know, he doesn't really have any sort of authority, but he's like, John seems, you know, the only things we know about what's going on are what John's told us. Let's let him, you know, keep riding this thing. So you have kind of the cops there, the FBI is coming in to take over. Hans Gruber is getting more and more annoyed, and basically we're getting this vault finished up. There are like seven stages of this vault, and kind of this hacker safecracker guy Theo can get through like the first six, but he's going to need some help on the seventh. Because it is electromagnetic, Michaela, and you can't beat that. But if you turn off the power, that could. And there's only one way to cut the power that Hans knows. That's have the FBI do it for you.
That's easy, right. Easy peasy. So, which puts him in the crazy, not stupid category. I just want to point that out. And so, of course, that's what he figures out. You know, the FBI is fighting with the city trying to shut off the grid, and they do it. And it's really stupid. Meanwhile, they're trying to figure out who this John McClane guy is. They have his name, but they don't. Hans Gruber doesn't know who he is, and he's really mad because, Ellis was no help. Ellis didn't get him to stop. Hans is trying to find, go through all of the list of people at the party to see who brought him, who he is. He's out. Hans Gruber actually goes out and is looking around, and he ends up coming face to face with John McClane, but he doesn't know that it's him at first. Well, John McClane doesn't know that it's Hans Gruber at first because Alan Rickman puts on this really awful American accent. It's the worst one I've ever heard. I think it's by design because Alan Rickman's amazing. He wouldn't do it. he wouldn't do it unless it's supposed to help you kind of help John kind of clue in that this guy is not actually Bill Clay or whatever he says his name is, but he's like, yeah, one of them. You want? Don't kill me. Don't kill me.
Yeah. So Alan Rickman is an all-time great 10 for 10 in this movie.
That's right.
But he does maybe the worst German accent and the worst American accent in a movie for sure right here. But yeah, they meet John McClane, luckily gets kind of the one up on them. And then he knows like who is who. But all of this stuff is coming to a head. And like I said, the FBI is raining in on the building. They're cutting the power. They're trying to send everyone up to the roof. They have the roof is set to explode when everyone gets up there, which seems like bad news. John figures this out. He does this. There's this really cool scene where he throws himself off of the roof with a fire hose tied to yourself, which doesn't seem safe. But I guess what are you going to do? I get really cool. Then his bloody feet are smashing into this window. So you get these big like streaks of blood as he's like shooting it out and trying to get in there. But you know, we kind of are finally coming to a head. Hans Gruber has figured this out. He's figured out enough. He figures out that Holly is the wife of John McClane. He grabs her and says, John, enough is enough. Knock this out off. I want my money and we're getting out of here. Leave me alone. I got the one up on you now.
Yeah. And so everyone's on the roof, but Gruber keeps Holly with him, right? John McClane's, he kind of moves the hostages from the roof just before everything detonates. And the whole idea is this is where it really becomes something that they build on in later, you know, Die Hard films is who was Hans Gruber, and because he was so much smarter than we give him credit for at the beginning. And it turns out that he not only wanted the FBI to be called, he needed them. He actually needed them to turn off the power, but then he needed them to let him negotiate and bring all the hostages to the roof so that when he blows the roof off, all the hostages die, which is really awful, but they also will think that something went wrong and all of the terrorists are also dead. And that's really great because that leaves Alan Rickman's character, Hans Gruber, and everyone that's left that hasn't been killed by John McClane to go sitting on a beach earning 20%. That's what he wants. But it doesn't go that way because McClane finds Holly and Gruber and the remaining henchmen, almost all of them. And McClane surrenders. He's like, okay, fine. But he has a secret gun on him because he was a cop.
Yeah, that's right.
And
yeah,
he has one gun he hasn't shot yet.
Yeah, he has that gun on him. Yeah, that's right. And we know that he had his gun on him because you see it in that very first scene when he's getting off of the airplane. You can see it underneath of his jacket. So he's had this kind of this pistol on him the whole time, and he's got it like taped to his back. You know, as he's running around there, and you know, he you know, kind of surrenders to Hans, but then is able to shoot him, and you get that really kind of famous scene of Alan Rickman, you know, falling out of this very high rise building and falling down. So, and then, you know, Everything is good. I guess Hans Gruber has been dispatched. Everyone is safe. They're finally able to get out of the building. I guess they turned the elevators back on. Probably not. They probably made them take stairs, 30 flight stairs, that's a lot of stairs. But they get down there. John McClane and Al finally meet face to face, which is really awesome as they've kind of built this friendship over the course of this past 2 hour adventure that we've been on, and they finally get to meet one another. He meets Holly. You know, they talk about, you know, being good dads and how, you know, happy they are to finally be meeting everyone. But there is one henchman, Carl, I think is his name, left alive, who comes out to make one last desperate stand in the name of Hans Gruber and that $640 million. But luckily, Sergeant Al Powell is there and is able to dispatch him. Meanwhile, Argyle finally decides he's had enough waiting around and decides that now is the time to leave the parking garage in Nakatomi Tower. And yeah, everyone is free to go about their Christmas. Mission accomplished, John McClane.
Mission accomplished. And then we hear
Merry Christmas.
Let it snow. Oh, the weather outside is frightful. Over the credits. It's amazing. Mm-hmm. It's now Christmas. It's almost Christmas Day. Everybody, yeah. I mean, everybody except the bad guys are still alive. I mean, you know, it's all good. Everything's fine.
It's and all good. Everything
looks like
is
Holly
fine.
And John are now going to make up. You know, one thing I do really like about this is we hear them arguing. We see them argue one time. And then John, when he is up in the bathroom, kind of getting cleaned up, and he's having a go at himself. He's like, why did you do that? That wasn't mature. Like, you came all this way because you wanted her to know that you missed her and you are trying to figure this out and work it out. And that, you know, that, you know, she you know, the reason he didn't move from New York to LA was because he didn't believe she could do it. And that's really hurtful because she has been able to do it. And he was just really proud and just a big jerk. And instead of saying all of that, they got in this big argument again because he got it again, his insecurities up because now she's going by her maiden name. And she tried to explain to him that, you know, in a Japanese corporation, she figured that that was a cultural thing. I don't know if that's actually true or not, but that's what she said. I mean, and so I love how he's talking to himself this whole time about this, you know, and then when the terrorists come, he stays in the bathroom. He has that service weapon. He can go out, but he sees that there's so many of them that he would never be able to get all of them and keep everyone safe. So that's why he continues to kind of hide and make a better plan. But the whole time he's like, why are you out there? Because you don't want to die. I don't know, but I want to, he's just talking to himself the whole time. And I just love it because it really humanizes him. And it's something that they do carry on throughout the next couple of thousand diehards that are out there.
That's right. Yeah. So Christmas is saved. Everyone is good to go and good to go for the next one, because like you said, Michaela, this spawned a lot of stuff. So Die Hard made, I don't know, roughly $140 million on like a $30 million budget, which is a lot of money, especially in the 80s. So, of course, they're going to crank these things out. We had Die Hard 2, came out in 1990, Die Hard with a Vengeance in 95, Live Free or Die Hard in 2007, and A Good Day to Die Hard in 2013. But this made, you know, it made an entire franchise off of this book that was written by the name of, what was it called? It's Nothing Lasts Forever. So this book became a movie, which became this whole franchise. But more importantly, it really kind of gave Bruce Willis to the world. It's kind of, I don't know, like it amplified his career, because he was doing Moonlighting at the time, which was kind of this comedy, romantic comedy kind of a thing that he was doing. But most people didn't think that he had any real depth to him other than that. And you see a lot of that in Die Hard. The way it's written is written you know, he wasn't the first pick, but once he was picked, it was written very much for him to make these kind of these more jokey kind of quips to it. But it also gave him a level of depth. It gave him a level of, bravado, I guess, in a time mm-hmm. that these action movies were all the rage. You know, we mentioned Predator, but, you know, you also had like the Rambo films, Jean-Claude Van Damme. Like this was like the way of like the mid to late 80s, right? These action heroes that became kind of larger than life. And this really propelled Bruce Willis into that kind of yeah. role, and you know, kind of pinned him in there, and he came back and did all of those Die Hard films.
I mean the character of John McClane, I think, is really he's like this everyman who's likable, and he's from New York, so he's hard as nails, but he's not, unlike Arnold Schwarzenegger, Sylvester Stallone, Jean-Claude Van Damme, he's not like this super uber overbuilt muscular yeah. guy. I mean, he's a good looking guy. But we see him age. He ages really gracefully. You know, he's not one of those people that's still trying to hang on, and he shaves his head, I think, by the third film. And he just kind of, you know, his relationship with his wife doesn't end up making it. They really try to hold on for the first two or three films.
Spoiler for the Die Hard franchise. Oh
yeah,
my gosh.
Yeah, they don't make it, guys. They don't make it. But he loves his kids. His kids grow up. They end up being in the fourth and fifth one, or the fifth and sixth one, something like that. I don't know. I really think that this, there's a reason why people watch it, and there's a reason why people feel like it's a Christmas movie. Not only is it because it truly is a Christmas movie, but because it's a fun action film to watch over and over again. And we see that the Academy saw it. That's why it was nominated for all the things that it did really well. The amount of glass and the amount of glass breaking that they had to probably do in some sort of crazy sound studio, it's pretty astounding.
Yeah, $640 million worth of glass was broken for sure. But yeah, you make a good point in that John McClane is kind of an everyman sort of a thing, right? Like you're watching this, and I know that I'm never going to be Arnold Schwarzenegger fighting a predator in a jungle. I would die in a half a second. But I could be John McClane and sneak around for a little while, and maybe trick a guy. I could maybe do that, right?
Yeah.
So you kind of would see yourself in that. And yeah, like you mentioned, Michaela, this became I don't know when it would have become a Christmas staple for people, but I know that it definitely is. It is a Christmas staple for you. It is not a Christmas staple for me. It's not a Christmas staple for Bruce Willis, because he says not a Christmas movie. Also, this movie came out in July, which is not Christmas time. So another feather in the cap for not Christmas movie, but a lot of people really hold it as Christmas movie because some of the characters hum some Christmas tunes throughout the film.
True, but
there is a nice tree. Nakatomi Tower does have a really nice Christmas tree.
It does have a nice tree. Here's the thing. Die Hard 2, definitely a Christmas film. It comes out. It came out in July as well, but it happens at Christmas again. It solidified it. I don't know. My tradition around this film, it was always putting up my own Christmas tree. I would always, depending on who I was with and the family that I had around me at the time, I would watch different films. And I don't know, probably my first time coming home from college, my dad was like, well, why don't you put on Die Hard? It's a Christmas film. And we would put up our tree. And it was great because the film is actually really long. It's like 2 hours and 12 minutes, very long for an action film. But it's really well done. It doesn't feel super long when you're watching it. And the good thing is it does give you that extra, you know, 45 minutes to finish all the trimming of the tree. But that's it. We have only that amount of time. That's the tradition. We have only that amount of time to decorate. Once that film is ended and we're hearing Bob Saget sing Let It Snow, or whoever it is do it, you're done. We're done. Or else I'd be there all day.
No, that's right. Yeah, that's why I got nominated for the best film editing, because the Academy were avid tree putter uppers, and they needed the extra time to get that put in. But I've never really viewed this as a Christmas movie, other than you see a lot of people say that it is, yourself included, and you'll see a lot of like debates online. It seems like every year there's always some stupid article from some clickbait website that's like, is Die Hard a Christmas movie? And it's this whole thing. But I never really viewed it as such, and therefore I haven't seen Die Hard very many times. I've seen it probably 4 or 5 times, but it's a really good action film, whether it's a Christmas movie or not. It's a really good action film.
Yeah.
It's got some plot holes, but it's 1988. What did it? No, I mean, come on. Let's be serious. And also leaves the teddy bear in the car. You fly that thing all the way from New York to California to leave the bear in the car. Come on, take that with you. That could have been useful in fighting crime for sure. But yeah, I guess let us know at home what you think about Die Hard, if you think it is a Christmas movie or not. If you make a Nakatomi Tower bomb to have with, you know, while you're watching Die Hard, putting up your own Christmas tree or not, if you're watching it in July, that's okay too. Let us know. Take pictures, send us videos of you dropping that little shot glass of peach schnapps into your drink. We want to see all that stuff. And you can see pictures and video of ours on our website, which is drinkthemovies.com. And you can tag us and all of that stuff on our social media, which is Instagram and Twitter. It's at drinkthemovies, and on facebook.com/drinkthemovies. Like I said, go to the website, get the recipe, make one up, and tag us. And Michaela, after they get done, you know, rescuing Christmas, I guess, where should they be going to make sure that they're subscribed to the podcast?
You can find us almost everywhere now. We're on Apple Podcasts, we're on Spotify, we're on Stitcher, we're on Good Pods, anywhere where Anchor Podcasts are distributed. You can find us, and you should find us. When you find us, you should subscribe, because we do 2 drops a week. They're really fun. We do our lobby bars on Tuesdays. We do our deep dives on Thursdays. We do a lot of drinking. We do a lot of watching movies. We do a lot of talking about all the things, especially this time of year. It's the holiday season. We're going to be doing a lot of really fun holiday stuff. So, you know, subscribe if you're really liking what you're hearing, and it seems like a lot of you are, which is really humbling and amazing for us. You know, leave us a 5-star review, tell your friends. We're excited and we're so great. This is the best job in the world. I can't believe we do this. I mean, mostly Brian. Brian does all the hard work, but this is amazing. We really are excited. It's our third Christmas season. That we're able to cover films and cocktails. So yeah. That's where you can find us.
We'll be up to our own 12 days of Christmas after this Christmas season gets over for sure. And we're going to be continuing on with our holiday movie month next week. And we're talking about another film that's basically the same as this film, except take out John McClane, add in Kevin McAllister. And we're going to be talking about all things Home Alone. But for now, Michaela, we better mix up another one of these Nakatomi Tower bombs. The Christmas party is winding down. I'm sorry to say, but that's okay. We'll do one more of these drinks, and then we'll take a quick break, and we'll be back to talk to everyone next time on
Drink
Drink
the Movies.
The Movies.
Yippee-ki-yay.